What if the leaders we trust most in peaceful times are precisely the ones who fail us when everything falls apart? In 1861, newspapers declared General William Tecumseh Sherman insane and demanded his removal from command. Yet this same madman would return to orchestrate one of the most decisive military campaigns in American history, his devastating march to the sea that helped end the Civil War. Sherman's story reveals something unsettling. Mental illness doesn't always weaken leadership. Sometimes it sharpens it. History's pattern is striking. Lincoln's crushing melancholy, Churchill's black dog of depression, Bondi's suicidal despair, Kennedy's complex cocktail of medications. These weren't obstacles they overcame to lead. They were, paradoxically, part of what made them effective when the world needed them most. This challenges everything we think we know about mental health and capability, forcing us to confront an uncomfortable truth. Normalcy has its limits, and crisis often requires minds that see the world differently. Depression strips away comforting illusions. Psychologist Martin Seligman discovered that depressed people assess reality more accurately than their mentally healthy counterparts. In experiments judging control over outcomes, non-depressed participants consistently overestimated their influence. Depressed students saw the situation exactly as it was. Researchers Ellen Langer and Shelley Taylor revealed positive illusions, the tendency of mentally healthy people to inflate their control and view themselves through rose-colored lenses. Winston Churchill's depression gave him eyes to see what others couldn't. While Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain declared Hitler a man who could be relied upon, Churchill recognized the Nazi threat for what it was. His black dog granted him courage beyond reason. Having faced internal demons daily, external threats held less power. Abraham Lincoln's melancholy worked similarly, making him realistic about slavery's complexity when extremists demanded simple solutions. Early suffering inoculates against future illusion. Sherman's transformation from crazy failure to military genius reveals mania's innovative power. After his breakdown, he revolutionized warfare by reframing the problem. Instead of defeating Confederate armies, he asked how to break a society's will to fight. His answer? Destroy civilian infrastructure to undermine the army's support base exemplifies true creativity, seeing an entirely different problem. Ted Turner's CNN revolution mirrors this pattern. Turner exhibited intense manic energy that Jane Fonda described as nervous energy that almost crackles in the air. His father's suicide after battling bipolar disorder suggested genetic roots. Turner compared CNN's 1980 launch to Rommel's tactics, attack with insufficient resources, capture what you need along the way. Both men demonstrate how mania enhances divergent thinking and integrative complexity, connecting unrelated ideas and revealing patterns others missed. Depression deepens connection to others. Severely depressed patients score higher on empathy scales than control groups, cultivating lasting empathetic habits that formed the foundation for radical empathy, practiced by leaders like Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. Their nonviolent resistance was active confrontation rooted in understanding adversaries as fully human. Gandhi suffered at least 3 major depressive episodes, attempting suicide as a teenager. He remained haunted by fears, socially anxious, and prone to despair. Yet this suffering enhanced his empathy. 3/4 of the miseries and misunderstandings in the world will disappear if we step into the shoes of our adversaries. King viewed his nonviolent movement as psychiatric treatment for America's racism. His creative maladjustment meant refusing both violent resistance and passive acquiescence, channeling violence inward rather than outward, a psychological strategy requiring profound empathy for victims and perpetrators alike. Depression teaches what success never does. We're all vulnerable, interconnected, and fundamentally equal in our suffering. Franklin Roosevelt embodied a hyperthymic temperament, high energy, sociability, and infectious optimism. His talkativeness dominated meetings. During one briefing, he spoke 46 minutes straight. Despite polio-induced paralysis, his vitality seemed practically unlimited, often exhausting staff. This trait ran in the family. His grandfather was called a queer duck for eccentric enthusiasm, and cousin Theodore displayed similar boundless energy. Polio transformed Roosevelt profoundly. Before illness, he was an untried, rather flippid young man. Francis Perkins observed, "The years of pain and suffering had purged the slightly arrogant attitude. The man emerged completely warm-hearted, with humility of spirit and with a deeper philosophy." John F. Kennedy's story parallels this, both sociable men deepened by near-death experiences. Research reveals resilience grows from exposure to risk, not avoidance, like a vaccine strengthening immunity. Hyperthymic personalities can withstand significant trauma and emerge strengthened, developing greater empathy and wisdom. Roosevelt invented the brain trust concept, revolutionizing politics by bringing academic expertise into campaigns. "You sometimes find something pretty good in the lunatic fringe," he remarked. His resilience wasn't despite his challenges, it was forged through them. Sanity supports personal happiness, but doesn't guarantee effective crisis leadership. Researcher Roy Grinker studied 65 mentally healthy young men, calling them homoclites, those who follow common rules. These community-connected men from stable families formed America's solid, steady core of stability, yet proved better followers than leaders, submissive to authority and unlikely to claim leadership roles. Neville Chamberlain exemplified homoclite leadership, very, very middle class and very, very narrow in view, known for rigid competence. His rational attempts to appease Hitler proved disastrous. George McClellan presents another example, second in his West Point class, academically brilliant, wealthy, multilingual. Unlike the bipolar Sherman, who failed in peacetime but triumphed in war, McClellan experienced the opposite trajectory. His failure stemmed from healthy normalcy. Never having failed, he couldn't see his own limitations. George W. Bush represents a contemporary homoclite leader facing September 11th. Friends described him as Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer all in one. Amiable, appealing, socially skilled. Untested in youth, he never developed resilience for later hardships. We err when choosing leaders like ourselves. This is our own homoclitic arrogance. Normal is great for friends and spouses, but abnormal challenges require abnormal leaders. Mental health doesn't ensure good leadership, and mental illness can create great leaders, though if too severe or wrongly treated, it produces catastrophe. This contradicts our deepest cultural bias. Stigma against mental illness remains stronger than racism or sexism. Since Senator Thomas Eagleton's 1972 removal from the Democratic ticket after electroconvulsive treatment revelations, no major politician has admitted depression. Lincoln and Churchill couldn't become leaders today. Our greatest leaders committed many sins. Churchill's alcoholism, Sherman's savagery, King and Kennedy's dishonesty, Gandhi's coldness toward family. These weaknesses were also strengths. Kennedy's presidency had two phases: early failure, marked by poorly controlled Addison's disease and steroid abuse, and late success after better treatment management. Hitler's physicians failed to restrain harmful drug use, giving him daily intravenous amphetamines that likely triggered catastrophic mania. F. Scott Fitzgerald advised developing the wise and tragic sense of life, understanding that life is essentially a cheat, where redeeming things come from struggle, not happiness. Our normal, mild self-illusion serves daily life well, but hides important realities. When crises arrive, some depression may help us see what's happened and what must be done. The paradox? Being open to depression may ultimately reduce it. Perhaps the question isn't how to cure these leaders, but how to support them, allowing their unique perspectives to emerge when we need them most.